Hi, and welcome to the Finally Pregnant podcast, the podcast for those who are finally pregnant and parenting after infertility and loss. I'm your host, Kat Strawbridge, and after almost 7 years trying with multiple rounds of fertility treatment, which sadly included pregnancy loss, I became finally pregnant in 2018, and I'm now finally parenting my gorgeous daughter, Ren. This season of the Finally Pregnant podcast is sponsored by Tomorrow Life Sciences. Ever wondered how and where your frozen eggs and embryos are stored? They are kept in tanks called dewars. Inside each tank, hundreds of eggs and embryos are submerged in liquid nitrogen. They're identified with tiny handwritten or printed labels, and the clinic manages and monitors them manually. This part of the IVF lab hasn't been updated in decades and also hasn't benefited from technology or innovation. That's where life sciences company Tomorrow comes in. Tomorrow has created the world's first and only automated platform for the management, identification, and storage of frozen human eggs and embryos. What does this mean? Tomorrow's technology replaces handwritten labels with sophisticated digital tracking, which creates an unbreakable digital link between the specimens and the patient. It also automates a huge part of the process, vastly reducing the risk of mistakes and human error. Finally, it monitors the safety of those frozen eggs and embryos 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Tomorrow's state-of-the-art technology gives patients and clinics peace of mind that those precious, irreplaceable frozen eggs and embryos are safe and protected. Tomorrow is being rapidly adopted by a host of clinics across the United States, creating a new and improved standard of care, and will be available in clinics in the UK this year. To find out more, visit tmrw.org. Links in the show notes. Hello there. How are you doing? I hope that you are having a lovely day, whatever you're up to. I had a lovely couple of days, actually, over the weekend, celebrating lovely, lovely Ren's third birthday. I know. My goodness, how time flies. It really does. But it was just such a privilege and a pleasure to celebrate her in all her glory. So on Friday, we went to Willow's Farm, which is kind of just outside the M25, kind of Potter's Bar, St. Albans, London, Colney Way. We had such a lovely day. We really did. It was glorious weather and it was practically empty. So we just went from ride to ride to soft play. We all flew down a bouncy castle slide together and yeah, watched her moving and shaking at the, Benjamin Button show, where they also wished her a happy birthday and sang to her. So yeah, it was just perfection, really. She loved her presents. I think I talked a little bit last week about what presents we had bought her. Well, I can confirm that the wooden Asda shop is a massive hit. I think I mentioned that it had a moving conveyor belt. It does. It's a manual one. It's not like an electric one. It's a manual one, but it does the job. Oh, wonderfully. And a beeping till, which, you know, I'm in my 40s and I can see the pleasure in that. So yeah, she is loving it. And we have played a lot of shop games. She also, from like friends and family and things, got a shopping trolley, a shopping basket, like all of the jazz to go with it as well, which is wonderful, wonderful. The other big present was the trampoline. That was from Bob's mum. And yeah, like, we live next door to a family that have got three children and they are constantly out on their trampoline. I also have loads of nieces and nephews and know just how much use trampolines get. So it was a winner for sure. We knew that and it has proven to be already as well, which is fabulous. We had a couple of birthday parties for her, a birthday brunch for her little friends, which was really lovely, actually. It was really fun. We hired some soft play. So it was going to be about bouncy castle, but it was too windy. So we had some soft play, which did get excruciatingly hot sometimes in the sunshine. So, you know, probably better to have indoors, i.e. in a hall, unless you have a house that you could put it in which case, well done you. But yeah, it was a little bit of a waste of money, I would say, if I'm being brutally honest. But we have to try these things, don't we? And then you can learn from our mistakes. But the rest of the party was lovely. We also tried Pass the Parcel, which we did last year for Ren's second birthday, but with her cousins who are that bit older. And so it worked because they knew what they were doing. Get a bunch of 2-year-olds together, 3-year-olds together to play Pass the Parcel. Not so good. It resulted basically in the adults sitting in a circle. But there was some like retro pleasure from, you know, wow, Pass the Parcel, haven't played this in ages. So, you know, I think it went down well anyway. I have put some details about the day and things that I bought and some presents and also links to some of the presents we've received, which we've really loved, on a blog post actually over at catstrawbridge.com. I will link in the show notes so you can kind of, yeah, like I say, learn from my mistakes or get some inspiration perhaps as well. Yeah, it was just, oh, my little baby. I love her so much. I really can't even tell you how much. She's just the best. And yeah, it was, like I say, a privilege and a pleasure to celebrate her birthday. So, yeah, right. Enough of that. On to today's guest. I am delighted to be joined by Vanessa Hay. And as I mentioned in our chat within like this episode, the last time Vanessa and I worked together was for an article for the Huffington Post. And it was just after I'd surveyed fertility patients about the support they received from their clinics once they got pregnant, or should I say lack thereof, because unfortunately, almost 70% of patients said that they didn't receive any support from their clinics, which is something that really, really upsets me. And I'm sure, unfortunately, you know, well, some, if lots of you have experienced this, are experiencing this. I know just how difficult, frustrating and anxiety inducing being finally pregnant is, especially in some cases, those first few weeks. So we have the 2-week wait while we wait to find out we're pregnant. And then we have the unspoken 2-week wait, which is while we wait for our viability scan and hope that we will get a heartbeat and, you know, hope pregnancy is in the right place. And oh, it's so hard. It's so hard. And yeah, yeah. If this is you right now, you're going through this and you're feeling, as one person said, that they had been set adrift by their clinic, which is not great. Please know that I'm here. Please, please know that. I hope the fact that you're listening to this means that you do. If you know people who might not know that this support exists, please, please, please do point them in my direction. Whether it be the Hangout, if you are someone who is up for support groups, honestly, they're just the nicest groups of people. They really are. And if you want to kind of just join one for free, just to test it out, just drop me a line. Please, please do. We'll actually open one out in the next couple of months so that you can join just as a taster as well. More news on that soon. There's also my pregnancy affirmation cards, which I know people absolutely love and keep by their bedside, or pop one in their handbag, that kind of thing, or the whole pack in your handbag. Why not? Or once you're over 12 weeks, the finally pregnant yoga and Pilates sessions. Like, there is lots and lots and lots of support out there. You are not alone. I feel like you know this, but if this is your first time here, if this is your first time listening, I just want to reiterate that you are not alone. You really aren't. Anyway, back to Vanessa, our guest, who is a writer and reproductive health advocate. She is also, and perhaps more importantly, some might say, definitely, mum of 2 young boys, the youngest of whom is just 7 months old. Now, Vanessa, who has been through a fertility and loss journey, only shared that she was finally pregnant after he was here safely. So she wasn't pregnant anymore, I guess. But that's something that she talks about during our chat around her fear of sharing. And as we talk about, like, there's no judgment, do what is right for you. But it's just really interesting to hear her perspective on that. We also talk in detail about her experiences of having polycystic ovaries, which seemingly went diagnosed for years, if not decades. Something, again, that seems to happen all too often. So please, please have a listen, because, yeah, if this might affect you, then, yeah, this might be really a really interesting chat. And if it doesn't, then I think you'll still find it a really interesting chat, to be honest. So please do keep listening. Vanessa also openly shares about her experiences of a particularly difficult and life-threatening ectopic pregnancy. So I just want to highlight that here and ask you to listen with caution if this is something that you think you might find particularly triggering in any way. But other than that, I just want to say thank you again to Vanessa for joining me to share her story. Links to find and follow her will be in the show notes. Please do head over and leave a review of the podcast if you get a chance. And yeah, just sending you all my love, and I hope you enjoy the show. Take care. Bye-bye. Before we head into today's chat, I want to remind you just how important it can be to talk and share our stories with people who get it. That's just one of the reasons I created this very podcast. And you already know how important that is because you're here to listen to people whose experiences you relate to. But I want to give everyone the opportunity to talk. And that is just one of the reasons I launched The Hangout, a community specifically for those who are finally pregnant and parenting after infertility and loss. When you join, you'll receive a free meditation, access to a 24/7 community, invitations to exclusive live podcast recordings with experts across all areas of pregnancy and parenting, a full and growing resource library, support groups, discounts, and more. Find out more at catstrawbridge.com. I look forward to seeing you there soon. Hello, Vanessa. How are you doing?
Fine, thank you. Finally. Oh, that's quite fitting, isn't it, for the podcast?
Very, very fitting. It's just a little bit of background. It's taken us a while to get this in the diary.
No, we talk about how busy our TTC, our trying to conceive lives are. Let me not assume that everybody knows what the acronyms are. We talk about how busy that is, but then when the kids come and then life happens, it's actually much more, stressful, isn't it? But yes, I'm so happy that we can finally kind of talk and catch up. It's been a while, Kat.
It has. You really kindly got involved in a conversation I had, or an article, actually, that I had or did with the Huffington Post a while ago.
I remember
ago
that,
about,
yes.
Yeah, which was amazing. And you have been a voice in this community for some years now as well, haven't you?
I think it's dating back to, it would be late 2018, because I think I felt more comfortable about talking about my journey, which you'll get to know about later on, as we have this chat. But I think retrospectively, so I started talking about it after I had my first son, Sebastian. So yes, he's four. So it's been about 4 years.
Yeah. And I think that is really quite usual that people don't talk about it until, they're ready, and retrospectively. And I totally, totally get that. Yeah. It would be amazing then if you could kind of talk us through your journey and what got you to that stage.
Sure.
And you have had another son since, which is amazing. So yeah, talk to us a bit about your journey, if you would.
No problem. So I would say my fertility journey, or doing something about it, started in 2015. So this was a couple of months after realizing that I wasn't having regular cycles. I think that was a time that I went like 9 months without one. And of course, if you're going to go 1 month, let alone nine, you're doing pregnancy tests to try and figure out if you're pregnant and everything else that could be happening. Pregnancy tests were negative. So of course, I sought some help from my GP, who gave me something called clomiphene. It's a drug that helps with ovulation and hopefully towards pregnancy, can get you pregnant if you are having obviously regular sex whilst taking the drug. But that didn't work. So that's what got me to 2015. I think it was around June time that I was referred to a fertility clinic, and I was thankfully and fortunately told that I am eligible for, I think it was one cycle, fresh cycle of IVF and a couple of cycles of IUI, to which we started with the IUI. And one cycle later, it's actually a weird one because they say that one was successful because I did have actually a positive pregnancy test, but it never went any further than me going into a clinic to get that confirmed. So I've never actually counted that. This is the first time I'm actually talking about it, Kat, with you. I've never ever counted that as a loss, or even a, because I never went through that formal, right, let's go into the clinic and do more investigation about why it was positive and why it isn't. But anyway, let's just say that was a failed cycle. I decided that I wanted to move straight onto IVF in September 2016, I think it was. September 2016, started IVF, The first cycle, I say, was successful, but unfortunately, it resulted in early miscarriage. That is a story in itself, but we don't persevered. And a couple of months later, thankfully, we had frozen embryos left over from that fresh cycle. So we transferred those in June 2017, and we found out we were pregnant. And that became our first son, Sebastian, who's now 4 years old. Of course, our infertility diagnosis or our fertility diagnosis was that I was unexplained infertility, which, just to say in layman's terms, I always call it unexplored infertility. You'll go through a round of tests, as much as they can do, that would indicate that, you know, there shouldn't be any reason why you can't break pregnant, but you can't. So that's why it's unexplained. So, well, what happened was, a couple of 18 months after having Sebastian, I found out that we were spontaneously pregnant. And it's strange because in between that was having very, very irregular cycles. But I think it was come August, late August. I think it was an August bank holiday. I'll never forget that. And I realized I didn't feel right, found out I was pregnant. And in hindsight, when I think about it, I didn't feel pregnant for quite a long time. So 6 weeks or 5 weeks in, I had some spotting, went to get it checked out. And they said, you know what? This is amazing that you're pregnant naturally. It's fine. It's going to be okay. You know, you got this far. I think it's just early, you know, whatever they call it. But it turns out, actually, Kat, that after maybe 3 weeks later, going in with more heavier bleeding and excruciating pain, I was having ectopic pregnancy. And it took, I think I got to the 9th week when things got really bad. And I went in, they were like, you are very near to passing away if we don't actually, so we cannot save your baby. Ectopic pregnancies cannot be saved anyway. They're not thriving pregnancies. We're going to have to check. And so it's a trigger warning, of course, as I talk about this, we're going to have to check to see what's going on inside. And I had internal bleeding. That's why it was really bad. So they said, well, you're in surgery straight away. I ended up having successful surgery, removing the baby, but then also a tube, my left tube alongside it. So I'd say that in the whole realm of my fertility journey, that was probably my most poignant part. And the reason why is because it almost felt like a full circle moment. I went from being told that I can't get pregnant naturally to getting pregnant naturally, only to lose that baby and then be told that I'm going to have problems getting pregnant naturally again. So it was just a bit of a swearer, but it was. I can't say it in any other way. And that was tough. That was really tough. I think the combination of nearly passing away and knowing what I've been through to have Sebastian, my husband, and even left without a wife, and then also losing a baby, losing a tube, which I deem as part of my womanhood, essentially, and then not knowing what the future would hold after losing a tube, I went through a period of really bad post-traumatic stress disorder because it was just all a lot. And I think because of that, my period started getting a bit funny again. Generally, anyway, when you have a miscarriage or you have a loss, they do say that it can kind of interrupt your cycle. And I've had a bad series of cycles anyway. So for a moment in time, I thought it was just that. But then it went through, again, a long period of time where my cycles were all over the place. So now we're now talking. So I didn't mention earlier on. So sorry, let me get you back into the kind of the time scales of things. So I found out I was pregnant with that baby. That was an ectopic in August 2019. So yeah, 18 months for Sebastian. And then September was when I lost the baby. And then so from September 2019 onwards, COVID comes along. So everybody's not in a good place anyway. So I've got missing cycles. So there could have been a host of things. Am I stressed? Is it the miscarriage? Is it COVID? Is it just my normal cycle?
There's
so many things. So anyway, I just thought it was good. I think I ended up having a cycle, I think April 2020, a month after we were in lockdown. And then after that, nothing for ages. Looked into it with the GP. So I'm back at my GP and they just say again, like, you know, we're having a very stressful time. Gynecology services were completely locked off, so I couldn't get it. In fact, got a funny story to tell when I get through the end of this journey. But so I said, you know what, can you refer me to a gynecologist, put me on a list, figure out what's going on, and we'll go from there. Anyway, it got to September. So this is from April to September 2020, still no period. I pushed and said, I'm starting to get really, there's times I feel like I'm almost about to bleed, getting really bad back pain, but nothing's coming through. So can I just check if it's not anything else going on internally. Thankfully, with that pushing and advocating for myself, and this journey has very much taught me about that, I ended up having an ultrasound. I think it was in November 2020. And mind you, I'm still on the gynecology list. And couple of weeks later, there's a letter that came back saying, we've seen that your right ovary block has a lot of cysts that's blocking things. So the reason why I'm probably not releasing an egg is because it's covered with cysts, and it's what we call is equivalent to PCOS. Like, it's looking like you have PCOS. So for the first time in ages, I've always gone through this fertility journey, not having a diagnosis, not having a reason to understand that bittersweet, there's nothing wrong, but still not having an answer to know how to fix it. So it almost felt like a weirdly, a eureka moment of, oh my gosh, like I can name something now, like I can do something about this. So when that diagnosis came through, it was annoying that it was Christmas when I'm looking forward to being able to eat a lot, but I started eating really, really healthily. So I started to read about estrogen fed meats and that kind of stuff. I cut out red meat, all that kind of stuff. I'm sure, and I appreciate that you kind of interact with my content. And as you know, I'm a believer, I'm a Christian. So I'm very into my faith. There was a lot of prayer that was going towards it because I'm still trying to navigate this. Right, not only do you have one tube left, you know, so your left side is blocked. You've got a left ovary, but no tube. And you have a right ovary and a right tube, but your right ovary is blocked. So it's like both sides had the problem of its own. So he said, so based on that, things aren't really looking good, Vanessa. So do you have any embryos left over from your, I know that you've had IVF before. Do you have anything left over from your last cycle? I said, yes, I do. And he said, well, you probably want to start looking into that if you want to extend your family, because you're 30. I think at the time I was 33 or 34. And they're like, you know, you're not getting any younger, you know, just being very frank with me. And it was actually quite a nice conversation. So that got me worried. And I thought, well, yeah, he's right. So obviously that's where I thought, services are closed at the moment. I can't afford any private healthcare. Let me start eating well. So we're into December 2020. And I started to feel better. And I realized that I put on weight, but once again, it was that is the COVID weight. Is it the lack of period weight? Is
oh,
it
that lockdown weight? I was not one of the people who, started exercising during lockdown, unfortunately.
Listen, neither. I was eating more, if anything. Because I missed eating out. But anyway, we digress. Back to that. So I just made sure I just did things that would help me to feel better, and eating was one of them. And then I think what I did realize was my cycles. I think I ended up getting a period. So after that one that I had in April, I finally got one. Some months after, I don't know if it was the dildo scan by the ultrasounds that helped things in November, I got one, and hey-ho, that was good. And then after Christmas 2021, I had one in February, and I don't know what it was. I have nothing else to explain it, Kat, but I just had this, felt a reason to test. And I thought I was going mad, but I just felt a reason to test. And I found out I was pregnant in February 2021. So I gave birth to that lovely baby in November, bonfire night, the 5th of November. And here I am. There's obviously lots that's happening to you. You could be here for
of
ages,
course.
But that's my journey. So it's just been a weird one of unfortunate diagnosis with no answers to spontaneous pregnancies. And an even more spontaneous one after being told that things are looking so bleak. That was less than 3 months that I found out I was after that diagnosis. So here I am today. And he's now 7 months and doing really, really well. Yeah.
Gosh, well, it is amazing that he is here. Absolutely. Like you say, you know, like we break these down into nutshells, don't we? And yeah. I think that myself and anyone listening to this will have, unfortunately, probably quite an intimate understanding of at least some of the things you've talked about, and understand the gravity of like everything you've just talked about in kind of 5 minutes. So absolutely, there is so much that will have gone into that. I hope you don't mind. I'm going to pick out a couple of bits from what you've mentioned. Yeah. And one of them is, so as an unexplained infertility patient myself, you were told, and having read kind of a bit about your bio, and that you had irregular cycles basically since you first got your period. So this is something you have lived with for a long time, not necessarily paid attention to. Unfortunately, as we know, there is very little education about PCOS. But by the time you actually get diagnosed with it, you have had fertility investigations, had fertility treatment more than once. No, once.
Yes,
more than once at that point. Yeah. You had got pregnant. You had had a baby. You know, you had had another pregnancy and a loss. And then you got diagnosed with PCOS. Now, there's kind of two big things. There's a lot of other things in there, but two big things. Like, one is, how could they not have spotted it before? Like, and is it something that I'm assuming, because the cycles were irregular, you know, for a long time, this is something you've always had. So please correct me when I kind of hand over to you if I'm wrong on that. But how could they not have seen it within all of that myriad of scans, because we know that there's a lot of scans in that that I've just said. Mm. And how did that affect you emotionally? Because, you know, and I realize I'm simplifying this massively, but from your diagnosis, you ate well for, you know, a period of time, and then you got pregnant naturally. Now, we will never know if those two things are, you know, related, but it sounds like they could be, certainly. So if you had been diagnosed with PCOS a long time ago, potentially you might not have had to go through everything that you've been through. Some of it obviously might have happened anyway, but so on an emotional scale, how does that feel?
It's a really good question, and there's a lot to unpack there, but for reasons of time, on an emotional scale, like I said, I think I mentioned, it was weirdly a relief. You know, one thing about me, Kat, is I don't like to see myself as somebody, I don't think there's anything wrong with it, but as a personal way of how I like to go through life, I don't like to look back to things that have already happened. Because one thing that I always value about the journey is through therapy, I don't feel like you have to suffer to learn things. I think you do learn things through suffering and through what you go through, but I don't feel that that has to be a prerequisite to grow and to be a better person in life. However, if that is the way your life trajectory has panned out, then I can only say that I'm grateful for things that I've learned. In fact, you know, going through IVF has taught me more. And this is the reason why, you know, if this becomes a question when we wrap things up, I'm more about reproductive health now. I'm not just talking on the scale of infertility. I'm talking about reproductive health, which is also health. We think about health when it comes to these really massive, big diseases that, you know, are life-threatening. Well, actually, I had an ectopic pregnancy that was life-threatening. So I think it was that. And that's why I say that was like the pinnacle of everything that I've been through. It really changed my perspective on life about things you shouldn't take for granted. So yes, I think there is well and truly a big possibility that things wouldn't have panned out the way they were. But on the other hand, they did. And from that, I've learned a lot. Because you spoke about the eating, for an example. I would have never. I pick up a chicken drumstick and I eat it. And I eat it with joy. But then I never think about, until the PCOS diagnosis, that you have estrogen-fed meat. And it is a thing. You know, I also think sometimes when we look at health, I always think, back in our parents' days, we're around the same age from conversations that we've had, I think. And parents' times, I don't, unless they weren't speaking about it, or unless media wasn't the most influential factor, I do think, why do things, everything honestly seem to be much more on a grander scale now, from cancers to infertility? And, you know, it's lifestyles as well that play a big part. Do you know what I mean? So I say that to say, I will never know, but I do think things probably would have been slightly different, but they weren't. That had to happen for where I am now. And I do think in life, sometimes you probably will still get to the same destination, but how it comes about might be different because there's the element of free will. That's just life, isn't it? So I don't mean to get really kind of philosophical here, but I'm just saying it for what it is. You know, it happens. There's nothing I can do about it, but it still has taught me a lot of stuff. And I think being so close to death, and I don't want to dramatize anything, but I was, did make me really, really think about life and taking my reproductive health seriously. So. Yeah, I hope that answers your question.
It completely does. And yeah. I think it's like, I commend you that you can face it with that attitude. I don't know if I could. I don't know, you know, like, or, you know, one day one can and one day maybe I can't, you know, that kind of thing. It makes me think of a quote, because when I was younger, I loved that everything happens for a reason. And then I went through fertility and I was like, yeah, whatever. But I read Jay Shetty's book last year. I think it was last year or early this year. And there's a quote in it. And I can't tell you how many times I've said this to myself. I literally said it to myself a couple of weeks ago when Ren got chickenpox. Don't judge the moment. And it's because if something happens in the moment, it might be like, no, oh my gosh, which is exactly what happened when I lifted up Ren's pajama top and I noticed chickenpox. But then I thought, you know, kind of a couple of days after I dealt with that, I thought, you know what, if she had had it in a week's time, in 2 weeks' time, she would have missed her birthday, we might have missed our holiday, we might, you know. So I kind of, sometimes I just really like that. And that was one of those, don't judge the moment when you're in the worst crux of it, you know. And I know that this isn't always going to work for everyone, you know, I do appreciate that. But, you know, like, so yeah, sometimes things, you know, as you say, we learn, we grow, we become potentially better people because of our experience, yeah. You know.
I love that. What a simple, powerful term. Don't judge a moment.
Well, it's all Jay Shetty.
I can't.
Yeah, yeah.
Sure, I'll look into that.
Yeah, he's amazing. His book is fantastic. Highly recommend it.
Okay, what's the title of it?
I want to say it's Think Like a Monk.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Highly really recommended. Powerful. So if we can just talk, so reproductive health and making sure people get that information. Can you just give us a little bit of an understanding about what PCOS is?
Ooh, that's okay.
I didn't tell you I was going to test you on the medical.
PCOS. So if I am correct, as an everything's an acronym when it comes to, you know, so reproductive health and
fertility. Polycystic ovary syndrome. Yes.
Thank you. I think it's polycystic ovarian syndrome.
Okay. Yes, yes.
And in terms of what it is, it's what it says on the tin, essentially. So I heard that you can have polycystic ovaries, but not necessarily polycystic ovarian syndrome.
Okay.
Now, I think I mentioned earlier on, and if I didn't, I'll say now that I'm now in the space of reproductive health. So I do a lot of writing about it. So I wrote an article, I think it was for Medical News Today. And if you get to this point in the podcast where I can give my details and pass it on,
of course,
there's a link to my articles. And I think the title of the article is An Invisible, How It Feels to Be Invisible, Hence Being a Black Woman, Marginalized with an Invisible Illness. Mm-hmm. And the point that I'm making about polycystic ovarian syndrome is maybe one of the reasons why, and I think I picked that up from the case studies I use, one of the reasons why it is diagnosed so late is because sometimes the symptoms are not obvious and they cross over. So I can't remember what it's called. There's a way that they diagnose it. I can't remember what it's called. I had a doctor who came in and gave that part of contribution to it. But they look for certain things. And I think one of them was insulin resistance. And I just put this out here now. I could be wrong.
Yeah, so I'm just trying to remember. Go and check with your medical professionals. Yeah.
Please. Thank you for putting that out there. I caveat and say that it's very important. But there are some key things that they look at. So I think one of it was, like I said, the insulin resistance. It has to be judged by an ultrasound to check to see if there is evidence of cysts on your ovaries, and then blood tests as well. Because like I said, you can have polycystic ovaries, you can have cysts on your ovaries. It doesn't mean you have PCOS. Mm-hmm. So I think a blood test also needs to be done, and it checks your levels, hence your insulin resistance. And I think all of that together and a couple of other stuff. So if you read that article or go online, there's a wealth of information out there. There is a way to diagnose it. And essentially, the most important thing is, like I said, it is what it says in the tin, because the presence of the cysts on the ovaries is what can cause things like irregular periods. One of the main things that people say, look, do I have this because I'm not getting regular cycles? It can cause weight gain, hairiness. So there's a name for it. Again, it's not with me. I'm not with it today. But yeah, there's a couple of symptoms, very common symptoms that you find that are very well known for PCOS. Mm-hmm. It's something that can be, I don't think it can be cured, but I heard it can be reversed.
I had finished that sentence in my head as managed, but reversed.
There's, again, there's a wealth of information out that it can be reversed or it can be managed, but it can't be cured, because this is still something that they are trying to know about. It's always common with those kind of clusters of reproductive health issues like endometriosis and, you know, these kind of invisible illnesses where people are managing it, or just about managing, should I say, on their day-to-day lives. They're not taken as seriously as the ones that are more life-threatening, but it can definitely have a massive impact on your life. For me, I noticed, again, even though it was around the time where people were getting lockdown weight, my weight has always fluctuated, not tremendously, but it has. Even something, I can't say the word, it's ureteris, the hair loss begins with age. Okay. It's spelt the way I'm trying to say it, but I'm just not sure if I'm pronouncing it.
Okay, I've not come across that one before.
But hair loss is very common. PCOS as well. So the point I'm making is it's something that can affect body image. It's a massive deal. So all these little anecdotes that I've mentioned, symptoms, they play a big part, but it's called an invisible illness because it's not, in the grand scheme of things, those symptoms are not things that people see as life-threatening. It's so sad we live in a world like that. But let's be honest, if it's not killing you or it's making you stronger, essentially. So, you know, people aren't, that's the reason why it's coined an invisible illness, because people kind of go about their day-to-day lives not realizing until 20 years later after the diagnosis, all that time, that's what was causing X, Y, Z.
Yeah.
And I can kind of say that was the same with me. I do sometimes wonder, those painful periods I had when I started to get hair loss in my teens, when I had the hairiness in certain places, maybe all that time and 20 years later, that's what it was.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Gosh. And it's so important, like, you know, for there to be more education out there about that. Like, you know, and it's something that I talk about very regularly on this podcast, I think, you know, about fertility education and that kind of thing. And, you know, it's not just have sex and you get pregnant, like, which is what you're told at school. Yeah. I will link to that article that you mentioned. And there's something that I took from this that I feel like it's important to highlight at this point. And you've said that PCOS affects 1 in 10 women, and this condition disproportionately affects women who are from Black, Asian and minority backgrounds.
Correct. Yeah.
So that is, and we know, I know from, you know, reports that I've read recently, there's a disparity in education or in confidence. I spoke to Mardoche quite recently for the podcast episode about racism, like just blatant racism, where as a Black patient walking into a room and not being listened to, not being heard by, or in all likelihood, a white medical professional. So it's important for people to realize that, you know, it does disproportionately affect those women. And so to, you know, be aware of that, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So the article, in essence, is kind of shining a light on those issues that are quite hidden, just misunderstood. And it's sad because, you know, unless, you know, when I went to that endometriosis screening yesterday, the reason why it was so powerful is actually, even though it was about endometriosis, I'm sure there are some women in there that didn't have it, but they still related to it. Because sometimes in the grand scheme of things, it's not just about the infirmity of the disease. It's the theme of not being listened to or heard, pain dismissed, all that kind of stuff. It's a common thing in everything. It's a common thing even in fertility.
Yeah.
Not being listened to, not being heard. In loss, not being listened to when someone is told, at least you can get pregnant, as opposed to, I'm really sorry that happened to you. So that's the power of that. It's just people sitting back and watching what someone is going through as opposed to judging. Yeah. And it's that term you use. What was it? Judge, do not judge before
the patient. Oh, don't judge the moment.
Don't judge the moment. So it was almost like, I feel like that film, or anything that is packaged in that way, basically eradicates that judging the moments. Yeah. Essentially, it was so powerful because PCOS is exactly the same. It's misunderstood. People don't see how it affects people's daily lives. You just have to sit back and watch or really listen to someone speak about it and how it's affected them until you really get the magnitude of what that person has been going through for how many years, or even if it's just 2 years. It's a big deal. It's massive.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I will link to that Below the Belt screening. So it's a film that is coming out about endometriosis. So I will absolutely link to that in the show notes too. So moving on, just from the PCOS conversation, you did then get pregnant.
Yeah.
And you had Elysian. And you have written a couple of articles, which have been amazing, like one of them about pregnancy after loss and the other one about survivor's guilt. And just like, just for the last 5 minutes, like, I kind of want to read this quote. You wrote it, but I have copied and pasted it in front of me, so I suspect you haven't got it in front of you. Would you mind if I read this quote that taken from one of your blogs?
This is your show.
I appreciate that, but still, like, you have, like I said to you before we hit record, you have just nailed it when it comes to being finally pregnant. You said, I regret to say that finally getting pregnant doesn't necessarily eradicate trauma. Our brains are too far ahead of us. I have an archive of experiences that sometimes resurface at the forefront of my mind, telling me to not get too far ahead of myself. Like, you, like that, like I say, you've just totally nailed being finally pregnant. You didn't share that you were pregnant or had given birth until he was here, did you?
Yeah,
maybe correct. You can just kind of, how was being finally pregnant? Why didn't you? And I say that with no judgment whatsoever, by the way. You know, why didn't you share?
I think from the get-go, it was the fact that I've spoken about my journey. So there was just too many things to worry about. And I'm not great at allowing, I wish I could, because I think there's such a beauty in it, but I'm not good at being accountable and saying, guys, I'm 4 weeks pregnant. Let's see what happens. The pain of having to revisit that conversation if anything happened, the fact that my last pregnancy was actually a spontaneous one that resulted in me, my life nearly ending, but not only that, being left in the limbo of, did I just lose out on an opportunity that might never happen again now because I have one tube? It was all too much. And I think sometimes us TTCers, or rather us in the trying to conceive community, we're misunderstood because we share a lot. I say this very carefully, so that I'm not judging. But when we understood the fact that because we share a lot and we're so open about being in these fertility streets, that we're going to share everything. And actually, for what it was my one time where I wanted to keep something for myself, and I felt safe in keeping it to myself. It was a very difficult pregnancy because they say that after you have an ectopic, your chances increase of having another. So we got through that. I had to have, from the get-go, I was in the hospital every other day checking to make sure my bloods were going up the right way, doing ultrasounds to make sure there was nothing that was hidden. And that was horrible in itself because I'm doing that in COVID. I'm going into the hospital not knowing if I'm going to come out with bad news. My husband couldn't even go with me. So even he wasn't really in the know until I'd get home and say, everything went well. I'm just waiting for a call. So that was one thing. Another thing was there were two things that were going on with Elysian at the time. So I think it was my anomaly. I can't remember which one it is. Anomaly scan, or the 20-week scan, whichever way around it is, if I've said it right. They said his kidneys were like quite far dilated. So from 20-week scan to birth, I had probably about 8 more scans.
Gosh.
Yeah. And then on top of that, I then had something called polyhydramnios, which is excess fluid, meaning that I could have given birth at any point from when they found out. Gosh. And that can also cause neonatal death. So I haven't said this. This is the first time I'm talking about it. But there were so many things going on in the background. I felt unsafe to share news that for me, hence trauma, was not safe to say until I was safe and he was safe. We speak about the Black maternal mortality rates. That's a big thing now. I can't escape the fact that my life is at high risk. No longer 5 times more, but 4 times more. I can't escape the fact that my son's life, from a medical perspective of what they were looking at on the scans, is at a higher risk. There was just too many factors that made me feel unsafe to say, this is my good news. And I very much have had therapy to trust and advocate for myself that I didn't owe anybody that. I didn't owe anybody that until he came earthside safely and I came out safely as well. So yeah, that is my reasons, Kat.
That is, yeah. And you didn't owe anyone even then either, you know, and that's the thing, like you said, you know, like everyone can do exactly what they want. It's their journey. We can share, but we don't have to share anything. And we should only share when we're ready, because sometimes sharing is so powerful, but sometimes keeping it to ourselves can be just as powerful. And it really, you know, again, regular listeners to the podcast will know that I talk about therapy and, you know, counseling kind of, and I had a counseling session myself just today. You know, I'm a huge advocate of that. You know, you were dealing with it. You were getting the support that you needed. Some people get that through Instagram. Some people get that through Instagram and counseling. Some people get that elsewhere. You know, it's each of us traveling on our own journeys, without sounding too corny. But, you know, and we should do that in the way that we see fit. So, yeah, completely, completely. And
I don't want to take away, because you mentioned it, is that you mentioned survivor's guilt. So if that's going to be linked in that, I do address the fact that there was an element of the guilt. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong. It wasn't all about, I don't owe anybody anything, I'm keeping this to myself. There was an element of that, but I wouldn't say that was a major factor. It was the feeling safe. You know, so we thought that the hurdles were the 3 months, then the 20 weeks. Oh no, there's so many more hurdles after that. And yeah, that was the biggest factor for me, alongside a slight bit of guilt as well. And just also, some people come back and say, but we don't want you to feel like you need to do that. But I was being careful about protecting space. I think there is, what I like about Instagram is, if you use it properly, there are ways to protect your space: muting, unfollowing, blocking, whatever it is. You've got that choice. So in some respects, if I was ready to share, I would share and share away, because I say this carefully, this community, and one thing I've learned, it doesn't have to be a pity party. It's celebrating the wins as well. It's celebrating that someone has moved beyond the ranks of this side and has now got a child. So if I was ready to do that, I'd do that, because I want to share a message of hope as well. Even though not everybody's trajectory will be the same and end the same, I still feel a responsibility to do that. But on that occasion, that wasn't that time.
Yeah.
It wasn't. No. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, I hear you. I get it. We do what is right for us. Thank you so much, Vanessa. I really, truly appreciate you joining me today. Oh. It has been a pleasure, an absolute pleasure. to chat to you. And, you know, as you've said, you kind of shared things that you haven't shared elsewhere before. So thank you for trusting this space to do that. I really appreciate it. There will be links to your website. And like I said, that article and the others are all linked from your website as well, aren't they? Yes. If people want to come and visit you on Instagram, they can come to.
So the handle is for Instagram at Vanessa Haye. It's H-A-Y-E. And then I'm on Twitter a bit for the banter and the Love Island stuff. But if you wanted to, sometimes I link my articles on there. So the handle is at It's Vanessa Haye. And then, but, you know, you'd find everything anyway if you go on my website, because it's got links to all my social media outlets. So that's how you can find me.
Brilliant. And the links to everything will be in the show notes. You mentioned Love Island. I am desperately trying not to get caught up in it this year.
I'm not watching. I haven't watched one single series yet. Okay. I think I can do it. Yeah.
Trying not to do it. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
An absolute pleasure.
All right then, lovely. Take care. Bye-bye.